This is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Rob Schaefer. Coming up on the show, Tony Gill and I react to the Bulls' thrilling win over the Knicks at Madison Square Garden and react to DeMar DeRozan's fourth quarter brilliance and the contributions of Nikola Vucevic picking up over the last two games. Later on, Casey Johnson and I break down the implications of the Lonzo Ball sign-and-trade investigation concluding and Kobe White's positive test for COVID-19 earlier this week.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
All right. Welcome in to the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I am Rob Schaefer. In this segment of the program, we are going to talk Bulls-Knicks, Tony Gill and myself, in a future segment of the show that will be coming up in 15 to 20 minutes. Casey Johnson and I break down the implications of the NBA's investigation into the Lonzo Ball sign-and-trade being concluded and Kobe White's COVID diagnosis. But for now, we can focus on basketball, Tony, because the Bulls and Knicks, man, this season, there's just something about these two teams. Every time they get together, it's something enthralling. It's something different. Tonight was the first matchup in Madison Square Garden of the season. The Bulls pull it out 119 to 115, pull ahead in the season series 2-1. This one had a little bit of a different beat than the previous two matchups between these two. The Bulls completely dominated the first half, let go of the rope a little bit in the third quarter. That feels familiar from Houston and Portland. So, you know, your life's flashing before your eyes a little bit. But they steady the ship. Fourth quarter rolls around. DeMar DeRozan, phenomenal. Scores 18 points by night's end. He's got 34. That's his 7 30-point outing as a Bull. Nikola Vucevic and Zach LaVine pour in 27 apiece. So 88 points between that trio in a game where you score 119. Yeah, that's what happens when, you know, Nikola Vucevic is on. We'll get to that. And I believe those three scored all 30 of their points in the fourth quarter. So that's a recipe for success. Alex Caruso was phenomenal, particularly defensively. We'll get to him. But I guess, you know, there's a lot of places we could start. Let me just start here, Tony. As a Bulls fan, how warm and cozy do you sleep at night knowing that down the stretch of close games – your team has DeMar DeRozan to just funnel the basketball to and let him do whatever he wants to do. How safe is that safety blanket for you?
You know that I never thought that sentence would be uttered in a in a Chicago reference.
They know how we get on the late night Bulls Talk Podcast.
But here we are, right? Like, DeMar DeRozan is our saving grace. He's the one that is so far is the leading MVP candidate, arguably. I mean, I don't think so, but based on the numbers, could be defined as the best player, on the team. But I mean, it's so soothing to go into a game and feel like not only do you have a chance to be competitive, but also feeling good like you're going to win. And that hasn't been a feeling in a long time, that no matter what happens in the game, somebody's going to steady the ship. And that was a huge issue in years prior, even with Zach LaVine, that once things got out of hand, there was nobody that can calm the storm, get you through until the next quarter or until the next possession. And DeMar does that now. He's that guy for the Bulls. And Zach has been doing that, and obviously he does do that. But I don't know about for you, but when DeMar does it, it feels – maybe it's the – I feel like Zach does it spectacularly, where DeMar does it more like, no, this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm going to go to this spot, and this spot, and I'm just going to just kill you from that point. Zach's kind of efforts look more, I don't know, I'm not a wordsmith, but extravagant when he's doing it versus DeMar, who's just chopping you down every possession. It's like those late game buckets in the fourth quarter, those middies, it's like a just death by a thousand
paper cuts.
That's what it feels like.
When
you watch them go to work in the mid range, and it's like, you know, oh, we can stop it, just contest it. And he still gets it off, you know, and it goes in, and it's like, oh man, this is supposed to be the hardest shot in basketball, and he's making it on a consistent enough basis. So, you know, to answer your question, I sleep pretty well knowing that the Bulls are gonna, you know, if they don't pull it out, we can discuss it in those individual instances. But so far, more often than not, they've been pulling through in those games.
Yeah, and I mean, like you alluded to, think of how much, you know, fourth quarter collapses were a consistent theme last year and throughout the rebuild. These are not games that the Bulls were winning on a consistent basis. They are now. I agree that there's a different feeling when DeMar takes over a game as to when Zach does. You know, these are words we've been using all season long. He's just so poised, a stabilizing force. You were talking about the mid-range shot making. Mm-hmm. Tonight, 8 for 10 in the mid-range. He was 4 or 5 in the fourth quarter. Also got to the free throw line 11 times on the night, 10 of 11. So when you talk about, you know, death by a thousand paper cuts, just gradually, deliberately, you know, maybe you don't know exactly the spot that the next shot is coming from, but you know the ball is in his hands and you know roughly what he's going to do with it. And he could still, you know, assassinate you all the same. Mm-hmm. It's pretty incredible. I think we could talk about it all we want, but I want to draw on a quote from Zach from postgame tonight. This is from Casey Johnson's story up on NBCSportsChicago.com right now, which I would encourage people to go read on kind of the relationship between Zach and DeMar and how they're pushing each other to be great throughout this kind of strong stretch for the Bulls. This is Zach on DeMar's closing ability. Quote, I don't think a lot rattles him at all. That's when you let him take over the game, calm it down, get to the free throw line, get to his spots. I think it just gives the whole team a deep breath, like we're okay. So, I mean, I think a lot of the fan base can relate to that feeling. There it is from, you know, Zach LaVine's mouth. And, you know, when you talk about kind of how much of a load, how much was on the plate of Zach LaVine over the last few years, and this kind of ties into the Vucevic part of it too, so maybe we can even kick to him. Mm-hmm. When you have three scores that are humming the way that these three have been the last two games, and you have, you know, Vooch get hot early in the first quarter, score 13 in the first. Zach also a little bit under the radar, had 11 in the first quarter. DeMar heats up in the second quarter. He heats up in the fourth quarter. Zach and Vooch also have massive shots down the stretch. When you can have that interplay and be taking turns between three guys that have kind of the all-star pedigree that these three guys do have, then you see things like Zach's defensive engagement tonight. I thought he was terrific on the defensive end tonight. Mm-hmm. Blew up a handoff in the first quarter and just throughout just looked locked in at that end. And, you know, that's an area he's been looking to improve for years. But just having that energy to exert, you know, obviously in the shot-making department and the offensive creation department, but also defensively, is just a huge, huge benefit of how much talent is now on this Bulls roster. So, you know, it's not going to happen every night, but the fact that the last two games – those three guys have, you know, eclipsed the 25 point mark, and you kind of see the fully actualized image of what this quote unquote big three looks like when it's all humming. Lonzo was even off shooting tonight. He was great in the Charlotte game. But just when those three are firing on all cylinders the way they were tonight, obviously it's offensively very potent in a way that hasn't been consistent throughout the
program. You know, Rob, I mean, I don't want to, I think because I'm holding them to a high standard this season, this is the standard that I expected. Mm-hmm. The only reason, I'm just going to say I specifically was harping on Lonzo to be more aggressive offensively was because of the lack of production from Vooch. Like, they need a consistent third score, and it's supposed to be Vooch. And for many parts of this season, it hasn't been. Then I'm like, all right, next man up, Lonzo, you got the contract. Let's go. It's now your responsibility because, you know, Vooch isn't getting it done on a consistent enough basis. But the last two games, this is what I'm expecting. And I'm not expecting, you know, high 20s every night, but they should be getting at least in the high teens to 20 points every game from all three of them. And that's what I'm holding them to the standard. That's an all-star level player. And I don't want this to be – I don't want to you know, pass this off as, you know, well, no, there, it's hot right now, and you know, hopefully they can keep this going. But no, and I'm sure Billy is saying the same things to them, you know, in the locker room. This is what they need to be successful this season, is all three of those guys, because then we're not looking to Lonzo Ball, who is not a natural scorer, to go out and get bucked. We're not looking to those other players as much when the main guys are doing what they're supposed to do.
100%. So let me ask you this. Zach and DeMar, we've seen this on and off, but mostly on for most of the season. Vooch enters the game Monday against Charlotte with one 20-point game for the season. Drops 30, 14, and 5 against Charlotte. Tonight, I think it was 27, 8, and 3 against New York. He was 6 of 6 from 3 against Charlotte, 5 of 9 from 3 against the Knicks. Like I mentioned earlier, some really, really big shots in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. He also, in addition to scoring the Bulls' first 7 points of the game, scored their first 5 points of the third quarter. So it's evident, you know, even, you know, Billy talked about this in through the lens of posting him up more, Vooch, after last game. Even when they're not explicitly doing that necessarily, whether it be screen and roll, getting it to him, you know, on the elbows or in the high post, it's clear that, you know, especially out of quarters, but also just throughout games, there's a real emphasis, there's a real intention on making sure Vooch is, no pun intended, at the center of offensive actions, that they're running a lot through him to get him in his rhythm. And it's worked the last two games. You know, like I said, one 20-point game coming into the Charlotte game. Now he's got two in a row, a 30-point game and a 27-point game against New York. What has looked differently about Vooch to you in these last two games? When you talk about this should be the expectation, what have we seen in these last two games that is now sustainable moving forward?
I think emphasis, I think, is a key word for me with this team. And what it's looking like now is, I think we know Zach is going to get buckets whenever, wherever. He doesn't, obviously he's going to get plays, but he doesn't necessarily need plays because the ball is going to gradually go to him anyway. Throughout the season, the big worry was, okay, how do we incorporate all those things? There was an emphasis to get DeMar the ball earlier on. There hasn't been an emphasis to get Vooch the ball this season yet, until recently. Now we found out, oh, DeMar is still going to get his. That's great. Now put the emphasis on where the emphasis needs to be, which is Vooch, to make sure he gets involved. Because I think we found out, without proper emphasis and intent on getting him involved on a consistent basis throughout the game, he may, you know, have some sleeper games, and you don't need that, you know, from him. So I think the difference has been, let's force feed him in spaces where before, you know, if he misses the you know, the first couple or, you know, or so, it's been, all right, it's Zach and DeMar time. And whenever he can clean up, you know, rebounds or, you know, whatever, like, no, have a consistent effort to give Vooch the ball, not just as a passer. And that was, we talked about this before in the podcast, is he's a good passer. I don't want that to be the main thing that he does. He needs to score to be effective. So the emphasis and the intent on getting him the ball to shoot versus to, you know, strictly, hey, look for, you know, DeMar, or look for the back end of, you know, the rotation, see if we can, you know, give it out to a corner three somewhere. Like, no, do what he's been in the league to do, which is score. They will work around that. Zach will work around that. DeMar will work around that. We've seen that they can do that. And those other guys, just do what you do. Lonzo, play defense, pass the ball, make your open threes. Same thing with everybody else. Like, once those guys are going, everybody else's job offensively becomes simpler. So I think the difference has been the emphasis and the intent in starting offensive possessions, making sure Vooch gets the ball.
Yeah, and with emphasis and intent, we'll see where it goes from here. But you can almost see confidence compounding on top of that, right? Because once the ball is being given to him in spots, you know, it's not – probably the most familiar, it's probably not the same spots that he was getting the ball when everything was being run through him in Orlando at all times. Cause even if the Bulls put a slight emphasis on, you know, posting him a little bit more, it's not going to be the same. Things just, you know, like I said, the usage isn't going to be quite as high. Things aren't going to be run through him quite as much. But once shots started to fall against Charlotte, like, you could really see his willingness to pull the trigger, like that aggressiveness and that confidence in being aggressive increased a little bit as the game was going on. Cause, you know, we talked about him as a facilitator. I think he's such a key to this offense, you know, playmaking from the short roll and, you know, from the elbows, just generally on the perimeter. But there were times, you know, in kind of the height of his shooting slump, or the nadir of his shooting slump, I should say, where he wasn't even looking at the basket on catches, mm-hmm. which that can't be, as you're saying, for an all-star level scorer, that can't be, you know, the first instinct has to be to consider all options at the very least, if not, you know, be score first when he's mm-hmm. having stuff run through him. And it seemed like he got away from that a little bit. And then now, you know, these last two games, it's been a little bit more natural. And obviously his scoring has spiked. So, you know, you hope that this is something that is a sign of things to come, just because the COVID thing obviously threw stuff off. It mm-hmm. seems like conditioning wise, I mean, he played another 34 minutes tonight. So he's been, you know, his first game back, he was at 26. Then I think he was at 29. And he's been over 30 ever since. So you hope that the conditioning aspect is coming back for him. And, you know, the scoring and shooting has obviously been electric the last two games. I wrote this in my observations tonight. He's up to 43% shooting from the field and 36% shooting from three on the season now, which, mm-hmm. you know, this time last week was unthinkable. Just kind of goes to show that the sample size for the team is still pretty small, and for Vooch, having played seven games less than the team has, is even a little bit smaller. So good signs for him there. You know, you even look at the shot distribution. 19 shots for DeRozan tonight, 18 shots for LaVine tonight, 18 shots for Vucevic tonight. Mm-hmm. That feels like a recipe to me. And obviously they were all shooting the ball super efficiently, so it looks great. And then, you know, even 14 for Lonzo and 10 three-point attempts. I even think process-wise, that's pretty good, even though he just wasn't shooting the ball well tonight. 3 of 14 from the field and 2 of 10 from three. A lot of those looks were clean. And for a shooter of Lonzo's capability and the way he's been shooting the ball this season, you'd expect a few more to drop, given the quality of looks. Let's go to Caruso quickly. I wrote that his stat line tonight, I don't think like a Hollywood screenwriter could have scripted a more Caruso stat line than this. He shoots 2 for 7 from the floor. He scores 6 points. 6 rebounds, 6 assists, 4 steals, mm-hmm. 3 steals in the fourth quarter, including a key strip on Julius Randle with 56 seconds left. Mm-hmm. The game was tied at 111. The Bulls rattled off 6 straight points from there. He has the alley-oop finish in transition. In the first quarter, he drew something like 2 or 3 offensive fouls, one of which on Taj Gibson incited you know, him getting ejected from the game early.
Do we still file Caruso as sneaky athletic?
No, absolutely not. And I don't think that I did, you know, from the time that he got to the Bulls, because it's been known. His prowess mm-hmm. in that department has been known for a long time. Tony, I don't even know how to set this up, but just what are you feeling watching Alex Caruso play? I mean, he's just so impactful on ways that show up on the stat sheet. Here's mm-hmm. another one, plus 21 in a 4-point win, 31 yeah. minutes. That's pretty yeah. incredible. Just what – Give me your Alex Caruso thoughts after watching him play tonight and just the run that he's been on.
I think the Lakers are looking at that like, I think we misread the room on that.
I think they've been thinking that for a month,
yeah,
if not more.
Yeah, I mean, they really screwed that one up, like royally screwed that one up. And I was surprised that they let him go, like considering like how well he meshed with LeBron. And it's not easy playing with LeBron James. And he... I heard it put this way. He's the LeBron James of playing with LeBron James. Like, outside of him, if he – outside of the superstars, obviously, that LeBron has played with, I mean, it makes sense. Like, LeBron's plus-minus numbers with Alex Caruso, like, was insane. Like, people were like, why is Alex Caruso doing this for LeBron James? And he's brought that intensity, brought that, you know, high IQ – you know, style of play, that toughness to the Bulls. And the Bulls have directly benefited from him being on the team. Mm-hmm. He may break the mold. I don't know. Maybe you can fact check me. I don't know if there's ever been a bench player on an all defensive team. If there hasn't, he's going to be the first. Like, he's got to be. Like, who's playing perimeter defense better than Alex Caruso in the league right now? Like, you can name a couple, you know, but a lot of that is based on reputation.
I will say on a night-to-night basis, it's hard to match his level of intensity. And I will check on that at some point on the all defense, mm-hmm. like going to a bench player thing. But he is, I think, after tonight, either at or slightly over 30 minutes a game. So he kind of falls into that like super sixth man category mm-hmm. where I think, I mean, to me, he's on track for first team all defense. Like,
without a second thought. Yeah, he's my, in terms of perimeter defenders, he's my first thought as, you know, an elite defensive player. And again, it sets the tone, right? What him and Lonzo do defensively sets the tone for the rest of the team. Their ability to not get screened, which was a killer for them in the last couple seasons. Mm-hmm. Those two just not allowing themselves to be screened really sets up everything the Bulls do defensively. And he's been great. I mean, it's only 6 points, but you feel him. Feel Alex Caruso when he's in the game outside of the stat sheet. And that's all due to his effort and his IQ for the game.
Yeah. And even when he screws up, man, he had four turnovers tonight, two early in the fourth quarter that could have been costly. On those two turnovers early in the fourth quarter, go back and watch him. He immediately comes down the floor. One of them, he just threw a ball right to Obi Top, and you could see him kind of be frustrated with himself. Comes down, just immediately strips Obi, gets the ball back. There was another one. I think it was a moving screen he got called for. 5 game seconds later, he tips the ball in the air on a Derrick Rose attempted pass, gets the ball back. Like, there is just something about him, just this uncanny, I hate to use the cliche of winning plays, but there really is all he does is he just churns those out. He's a highlight factory of those types of plays on a nightly basis. And the IQ, obviously it shows up on the defensive end, just in the way that he knows opponents' tendencies. Like you said, the way that he navigates screens, the way that he just kind of knows where to be in terms of generating deflections and strips and blocks and things like that. And also offensively, I mean, 6 assists tonight, 7 assists against Charlotte, and 6 assists against Miami. They've been using him. I don't think they saw as much zone from New York tonight as they have against some teams recently, but they've been using him in the center of that zone.
Oh, Tom Thibodeau team, he's never playing zone.
as a decision maker. So, you know, that IQ is showing up in a lot of different ways, passing wise, especially in transition. So he's been outstanding. Let's empty the notebook on a few more. Do you have any other burning takes from this one on anybody else on the Bulls that you want to get out or the Knicks?
No, not really. I'm enjoying the rivalry though. I'm enjoying that, Chicago versus New York is a thing now where it's been so out of whack. Either the Bulls are really good and the Knicks are god awful, or the Knicks for some reason are good and the Bulls are god awful. Like, it's nice that they are on even terms. And if we get a possible 7-game series out of this, this is gonna be a good one. So I'm looking forward to what this rivalry becomes, for the next couple of years.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Listen, every game this season has just been unbelievable. Obviously, the first two were at the United Center. This one at Madison Square Garden, it's kind of crazy that they've already played 3 times in the first 23 games of the season. I think they only have one matchup left in MSG for the season. So that's kind of a bummer. But let me empty the notebook here. Let's go to the Knicks side for a second. Julius Randle is just a problem for this team, obviously, with the size issues that they deal with. 30 points, 12 rebounds, 6 assists. The one thing that I'll say, 7 turnovers. The Bulls forced him into 5 turnovers last game, too. They have moments where those double teams come right at the right time, and you can kind of...
Oh, yeah, he will do that, yeah.
He'll fluster him a little bit.
Yeah. He definitely will give you the ball if you annoy him enough.
Yeah. So the Bulls did a pretty good job of that, I thought, in big moments. We mentioned the Caruso steal earlier. That was kind of the final swing point of the game. Mitchell Robinson gave them problems in the second half. He finishes with five blocks after a pretty quiet first half. Fournier and Quickly got hot from three. So shout out to them in that third quarter that we mentioned that was kind of a letdown. It gets to be a sidebar topic of discussion because the Bulls pull out the game, but it probably gets looked at with a little bit more of a microscope if they end up losing this game. So third quarter's still a point of inconsistency. On the Bulls side, Lonzo, we mentioned him shooting poorly, also got into foul trouble. That feels like it's been happening a fair amount recently for Lonzo. This is something Billy talked about a couple games ago, which I thought was interesting, kind of how one thing defensively for a group that has been pretty outstanding at that end of the floor all season, one thing that he thinks they need to get better at is over fouling. But the thing about that is it's kind of a product of one, their defensive philosophy, which is super hyperactive, super aggressive. You know, that's just naturally, you know, on off nights or even some on nights going to come with the risk of getting into foul trouble, and also just playing at a size disadvantage. A lot of times, like, you're just going to find yourself in that situation. So Lonzo finds himself on the short end of that. Tonight, he was able to work through it. Him, Caruso, and DeRozan all finished with four fouls. But the Bulls never got into as bad of a situation as they got in that last Knicks game when Caruso and Lonzo both had four in the third quarter, I think. And they ended up in a, you know, a tough little stretch there where the Knicks made it the game. And then quick shout out at the end here. Troy Brown Jr. breaks back into Billy Donovan's rotation with Coby White recovering from COVID. Troy played 9 minutes, scored 5 points, made both of his shots, including a three, two rebounds, and a steal. You know, KC tweeted this, and I thought it was a good point. It's kind of a snapshot of this team's mentality. Like, you know, the stay ready thing, the next man up thing gets talked about a lot. It's a pretty popular cliche in the NBA. But I really do think this team, you know, top to bottom, you see it in the bench engagement, and you see it when, you know, guys like Troy, you know, Tony Bradley hasn't really been called upon recently. Maybe he will at some point. Alize Johnson, same thing. Ayo Dosunmu, now his minutes are back up in the 15 to 20 minute range with Coby out. I just thought, you know, for Troy to come in after being on the shelf for so long and to make an impact, he made, you know, the one open catch and shoot three he had. He had an offensive rebound and a putback. You know, had a loose ball that he wrestled from Alec Burks that came at a pretty timely moment in the second quarter. I agree that that's, or I agree with KC's tweet that is, that is a little bit emblematic of just kind of the top to bottom, like, professional, even keeled, like, very serious minded approach that this team has. So, you know, Billy basically went eight deep tonight with 9 minutes of Troy Brown Jr. That feels reasonable to expect moving forward, considering this was a matchup where they were giving up a lot of size and we still didn't see Tony Bradley or Alize Johnson. It probably would have required a little bit more foul trouble to see one of those two. So just wanted to shout him out. I think that's all I have on this one. Just great win for the Bulls. They're 15-8, and it sets up a matchup between the 1 and 2 seeds in the Eastern Conference. The Nets in first at 15-6, the Bulls in second at 15-8. You know, sets up a matchup between the two best teams in the East Saturday at Barclays. That's pretty fun.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's funny. We were talking, like, there's been a lot of chatter, you know, about the Nets, KD's ashiness, like, a lot of stuff about the Nets, and here they are still the number one seed in the East.
Yeah, like, man. I mean, Harden's figured it out.
So. Yeah, yeah. Like, it's crazy, but just considering that, but, you know, here we are, and the Bulls are number two right there, you know, which should be lead to a very, very interesting matchup and a fun night of Bulls basketball.
Fun night of Bulls basketball. Listen, the Bulls, last time these two teams played, had no answer for Kevin Durant. I don't anticipate that changing much because he's on a tear, even if you do have a good answer for him.
Yeah, yeah. He's as much as I like Steph Curry, I think he's the MVP right now.
Okay. I'd still go Steph, but it's reasonable. It's a reasonable debate.
He's battling the ashiness too. Like, you gotta factor that in too.
Well, I don't know how to factor that in. It's not something that I think about very often. What else are we gonna? Oh, last thing, and the other thing on the Nets, Bulls from the last time they played at the United Center when the Bulls kind of ran away from them and hid in the fourth quarter. Harden was pretty ineffective in that game. Mm-hmm. There was a point in the second half, predominantly, I think it was in that third quarter, where Caruso was just told, like, he is your responsibility, and mm-hmm. James Harden wasn't as much of a factor in the game anymore. So, mm-hmm. you know, after we just sang the praises of Alex Caruso, it'll be interesting to see how that matchup goes mm-hmm. when they face off on Saturday.
Yeah, dudes aren't afraid to guard James Harden anymore. Mm. You know, and it wasn't anything that James was really doing. They were scared of the refs. And that offered James like a lot of room to operate offensively. So it's nice to know that he's getting adjusted, albeit slowly, slower than the rest of his peers, you know, at the new rules. But James
Harden, I checked this the other night. His free throw attempts are almost at what they were at.
Yeah.
Last season. I think he's up to 7 now. He was 7.3 last season. So, you know, he got clowned, but this dude's a superstar player, great, yeah. like a champion player for this generation. Like, he's going to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if he figured it out, and that was probably my biggest frustration with James Harden, is like, dude, you're already good at basketball. Just go be good at basketball. Like, you don't need the other, you know, stuff that you're doing. But I'm glad he's getting back to playing basketball, and we're seeing that, no, James Harden's still really, really good.
Can't think of a better way to end a Bulls Nets preview than that. James Harden is good at basketball. So that's all for me and Tony. That'll wrap segment one of this edition of the Bulls Talk podcast. Now on to Casey and I's discussion on the Lonzo Ball investigation and the outlook for Coby White, who tested positive for COVID earlier this week.
All right. So on this segment, we are going to be talking about the Lonzo Ball investigation finally concluding and the league doling out their penalties to not only the Chicago Bulls, but also the Miami Heat and their Kyle Lowry situation. Lengthy investigation started, Woj broke the news in early August and concluded yesterday. So long investigation with a lot of twists and turns because, you know, the longer it took, the rumors started growing and you thought the penalties might be severe. But at the end of the day, it's a second round pick for each team, which is not insignificant, but certainly less than I was expecting, given how long the investigation took. I've not really gotten much reaction from the Bulls other than the statement they released, but I would have to believe that they're pleased there's no monetary penalty and or more severe draft capital. So that's the punishment. We'll get into kind of where I think what happened with it in a bit. But Rob, what was your reaction when the punishment came down?
All that for a second round pick? that was my reaction. Just because, like you said, it had been dragging on for so long. I believe we were nearing the 4-month mark of the investigation. It was almost the 4-month anniversary of the signing being first reported. Obviously, it was officially announced by the Bulls a little while later in free agency back in August. But yeah, I mean, as you've hit on, it was lighter than I was expecting. But when you read the fine print of the league correspondence on it, it becomes clear that this was. And Casey, correct me if I'm wrong here as I kind of dive into the verbiage of this, but it struck me as something where the dissonance came because this wasn't necessarily ruled on as a tampering violation. This was a violation of improper contact with a free agent earlier than the negotiating window, where tampering would be improper contact with somebody who's under contract with another team. This seemed, in the case of the Bulls and the Heat with Lowry and Lonzo, a case of being in contact too early with a player that wasn't under contract with anybody, but it was just too early to be negotiating with them. So it seemed to me that that's why it wasn't as severe a penalty as maybe people were expecting earlier. I mean, you know, there was a lot of talk and speculation about the NBA ratcheting up its maximum punishments for quote unquote tampering, you know, $5, $10 million fines, first round picks out the window, suspending executives, et cetera, et cetera. None of that comes to pass, which is good for the Bulls. Obviously, you know, I think it was Seth Partnow who's over at The Athletic. He tweeted this out. It was a great point. Like, do you think if the Pelicans had asked for an extra second round pick in the Lonzo Ball sign and trade back in August, the Bulls would have happily done it? I think so. So they come out, you know, looking okay with this. Obviously, there was some misconduct that they were found to be guilty of, so there's a slap of the wrist that had to happen. But ultimately, they got their guy. This isn't a regime that's been shy about shelling out draft capital, much less secondary draft capital, to, you know, make the improvements that they feel need to be made and get people in the building that they feel need to be in there. Lonzo's been tremendous for the Bulls early in the season as they've gotten off to a great start. But for the most part, I agree with what Billy Donovan said at practice yesterday, which is just kind of happy for it to be over with, because it had been dragging on. We have a resolution. I was mildly surprised to see it be as light a punishment as it was, but here we are.
Well, several things. You touch on how this was not a tampering investigation. I thought that was a big takeaway from the league's release, is that the word tampering was not mentioned ever, and it's my understanding that they went to great lengths to point out that distinction to people that didn't pick up on it the first time, because Lonzo was not under contract to the Pelicans at the time that, you know, whatever guilt the Bulls were found guilty of, had contact with him and his representatives, et cetera. So that's one thing. And number two, and Woj touched on this in some stuff I saw that he put out, is that, you know, both the Heat and the Bulls were very cooperative throughout this investigation. So that was taken into consideration when you're doing the penalty. And then the big thing that I think, you know, originally when the story first broke was pointed out, but I think kind of got lost in the shuffle. You know, the Bulls and Pelicans had legitimate trade talks on Lonzo Ball in March. So it's like, it's clear the league does not like complex sign and trade transactions to be announced 30 seconds into free agency. That's the takeaway from the penalty. However, the Bulls knew exactly what it needed to get Lonzo Ball, because they had gone in depth on trade talks in March. So, you know, teams talk all the time, executives talk all the time, representatives talk to team executives all the time. That's for sure known throughout the league. So it's just the fact that it was announced 30 seconds in is what the league is not liking.
Or reported, I guess, would be maybe the dictionary definition there. And let's be real. I mean, we're not Miami Heat or Toronto Raptors reporters, so I at least don't know this firsthand, but it wouldn't surprise me if there was a pre-existing kind of negotiating relationship between Miami and Toronto over Kyle Lowry either, because Kyle Lowry was a name that was bandied about last trade deadline a lot too. But yeah, I think the fact that these sign and trade negotiations are more complex is a big part of this. We should also maybe hit on the housekeeping note of this second round pick. It's a little unclear. It says it's the next second round pick that each team has that's owed. It's hard to say definitively what year it's going to be now, because it's just for the Bulls, at least, because it's just the next one that they own. The next second round pick that the Bulls own of their own is in 2026 through a bunch of different trades. They've given away their 2022, 23, 24, and 25 seconds. Now, the caveat is they are owed a second-round pick by the Denver Nuggets in 2023 if that pick falls between 47 and 60. It's protected 31 to 46. So basically that boils down to, if the Denver Nuggets make the playoffs in 2023, the Bulls would get that second-round pick. And if they haven't acquired a second-round pick by then that's the pick that would get docked as a result of the investigation. Now, if the Denver Nuggets don't make the playoffs in 2023 and it falls 31 to 46, based on Real GM does a really good job detailing future draft picks and kind of what NBA teams owe each other. According to that, the Nuggets owing the Bulls that pick, that responsibility is extinguished if they don't convey it that year in 2023. So then it would move on to 2026. But based on kind of the way that the league seems like it's going to handle these things, it's just the next second round pick that the Bulls have in their pocket will get revoked. So we'll see how that plays out. It's kind of a semantics thing. It's a very small technicality. The overarching point, as we've hit on, is that it's a pretty light punishment, all things considered. We'll just see exactly what year that ends up being. Whenever it is, again, it's not nearly as bad as it seemed it could have been based on some of the speculation and reporting early on.
So busy, Lonzo ruling coming down was also part of a busy news day in which we found out, per Billy Donovan, that Coby White had tested positive for COVID-19. Really just unfortunate development, obviously. You know, not only from a health standpoint and wishing Kobe that, you know, he doesn't have a serious case or a speedy and does have a speedy recovery, but also just in light of how rocky of a season he's had, obviously, you know, just gotten back from the shoulder offseason shoulder surgery to repair a torn labrum, had struggled to kind of find some rhythm, had a couple nice outings. You know, he's the kind of player that seems to have a cumulative effect to his game. So the longer he's out there, the more he's playing, the better offensive rhythm he can get into. So difficult blow for him, difficult blow for the Bulls. I can just tell you a little of the logistics from the testing standpoint, and then you can get into what you think, you know, what kind of absence he might be looking at. But,
yeah,
you know, all teams started undergoing daily testing coming back from the Thanksgiving holidays because, you know, some players go out of market if they're able to for things like that. So around the league, testing had increased, and Kobe underwent a test Wednesday morning in which it was discovered that he was tested positive. The Bulls are fully vaccinated, so this is a breakthrough infection. You know, the league is starting to make some noise about booster shots. We asked Billy Donovan about that, and he said obviously that's an individual choice for the players. I know that the Bulls, like a lot of teams, worked hard to, you know, persuade some players, even initially, to get vaccinated, but they did reach full vaccination and should be lauded for that, obviously. So, you know, that's why he was being tested. And now that there is a positive test, players and coaches are going to be getting tested on game days, very similar to what happened when Nikola Vucevic got tested positive. So that's going to be part of the Bulls' immediate future. And they're going to be without Kobe White for a bit.
Yeah. So that in terms of how long this absence is going to be, you know, this 10-day time frame gets talked about. If, you know, he tested positive on December 1st, tracking that to December 11th. The Bulls are in Miami on that day. That's 5 games in the future. They obviously play the Knicks Thursday, Nets Saturday, Nuggets next Monday. They're at Cleveland next Wednesday, and then at the Heat next Saturday. So that would be the 10-day mark. Then they don't play again until they're home against Detroit on December 14th. So we got to see, you know, when we talked to Billy yesterday, it was still pretty fresh, the news. So we don't know what Kobe's case is like in terms of him being symptomatic. And obviously this is going to have to play out over the next week or so, and we'll see. But it's looking like in that 10-day time frame, there's probably at least 5 games he's going to miss. And then, you know, obviously December 14th, that'd be the 6th game. December 16th, that'd be the 7th against the Pistons and Raptors respectively. So we'll see what that timetable looks like. It's obviously the schedule isn't as jam-packed with games as it was when Nikola Vucevic went down at a glance. But it's certainly just an unfortunate development for Kobe, who, as you said, KC, other than the, you know, 2 games that he, you know, looked like he showed signs of breaking out, he wasn't playing particularly well after coming back. It's obviously understandable coming off the injury, playing on a completely new roster, playing a completely different role than he was last year. But this certainly doesn't help him in the process of finding his footing. Not only do you spend, you know, another relatively extended period of time away from the team, when he comes back, I mean, you know, we've seen, you know, the range of, you know, how difficult it has been for guys to come back from COVID has kind of run the gambit. And we'll just have to see what Kobe's case is like and how he fares when he comes back. But certainly unfortunate. Rotation-wise, there's going to be a reaction segment of this podcast, reaction to the Knicks-Bulls game tonight. So we'll have a little bit of a window into what Billy Donovan's new rotation looks like without Kobe in there. I'd imagine more Iodesumu, perhaps more Troy Brown Jr. On the perimeter. But, you know, certainly unfortunate because although Kobe hadn't played up to his potential yet, him getting up to speed had the opportunity to really positively affect this team. And now this throws another wrench in that. So we obviously wish him a speedy recovery, and we'll keep you guys updated over the course of this next week and a half as to when he might be back, when that's looking like it's on the horizon.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say is, so Vooch, I know all 2 cases are different. Obviously, Vooch missed 7 games. But I got to say, man, like, Vooch to me is probably the example of, like, the best return. I mean, in game 1, he exceeded his minutes limit. He was only supposed to play 20 minutes. He felt good enough to play 26. And he's been up – he was at 35 minutes last game. I mean, he's been up pretty high minutes pretty quickly. So, you know, that's best case scenario for a guy coming back from that situation. So hopefully that can be a precedent for Kobe White and the Bulls, and see how it plays out.
Yep. We hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning.